Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys, you're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
So linking back into the series of the, you know, preparing for UEFA B, obviously we didn't get to have this conversation last week, but on the first one we talked about principles of play. So part two, linking individuals to units. Straight in, man. Where does your mind go? What are your thoughts? What's really key here to think about? And yeah, we'll go from there, man.
Well, probably helps specifying what do we mean by unit. You've got, and even now that I think the game's changing so much that the formation is a start position, not a set position, right? So in animation, the system of play, the shape, the structure that people can attack or defending can change. So because of that, you could define it as, you know, your defence, your midfield, attack as your units. Let's say you're playing a flat 1-4-4-2. You've got your defensive unit, your midfield, and your attack. Just to make it super simple. But then I would say, you know, if we look at how the game is now, the units part of it, you're operating within units and units, aren't you? There's units within units. So if we're linking individuals to units, who are the key players within that unit? So if it's a back four or back three, one of the central defenders would be an individual, let's say, within that unit. And you're thinking about their role within that unit. So how do they operate within that structure? How do they control and communicate? But the units can change because, you know, teams and systems aren't strictly, you know, rigid. They're quite fluid. So often a lot of players are dropping in and out of different units. So the individual piece, I think, is quite interesting. It'd be interesting to see where you go with it. But, you know, there was a game I was watching recently where, you know, I saw a bit of analysis on it as well, Roma v Brighton. And you're looking at how one of the deep-line midfielders drops in between the two centre-backs, which is often a lot of people see that. That's not new, let's say. So he's gone from a midfield unit as a number six into a back three. And then the two outside defenders end up pushing high and wide to become, so instead of becoming a back five, they end up pushing. It became a 3-2-5 in animation. So this is Roma. So the two outside players pushed high and wide, creating almost like a 2v1 against the opposite fullbacks. And as a result of that, as the ball travelled, the wingers made this in sort of curved run in between, which opens up a gap. And so you're just thinking, like, what's the role of the individual within a unit? So hopefully that at least tells you where my brain goes. When I think of individual within units, I think of like the individual player's role within that unit. So how are they controlling the tempo of the game? How are they dictating the tempo of the game? Influencing the game.
Yeah, I think there's a bit in there, and I think, you know, you're probably best to, like you said, start off with some sort of definition, if you like, or reference as to what we mean by units. But as you quite rightly said, you know, it can be so fluid and versatile in terms of what that looks like at any given moment in the game, beyond obviously what the set formation is to start with. So I think, apologies. I think probably worth, like you said, you know, just really looking at, well, what it's more about the roles, right? I think if I take it back around the theme of the session in being linking individuals to units, you know, my perceptions go to, well, what are the roles and responsibilities within it, kind of linking to what you said there. But where might those roles and responsibilities change based on game state, based on, you know, what phase we're in, based on how we want our teams to play? And obviously that's so subjective, and there's so many different ways you can go about it. But I think it's, you know, linking individuals to units from a point of the B license for me is start by coaching the initial players first, look to then link that to the wider unit within the context of what you're coaching. And I think it's just starting to kind of get coaches on the wavelength of, right, how much coaching are you doing away from ball and around the ball? It was interesting, you know, was speaking to a lot of coaches recently, observing not just B license, but even A license, not just delivering B license as well, but just how that is a real big challenge for a lot of coaches. And because, you know, quite often we are zoomed in and very tunnel vision, especially early on in our journeys, you know. And obviously this is preparing for UEFA B kind of series, but it's not limited to coaches only working towards getting onto the B or going through the B, right? So I think it's just a bit of an understanding of how, for me, whatever happens with the individual actually has a fundamental influence and impact on the players around them. How often do we consider, if at all, ever, what that impact and influence is? So I think that's probably where my mind goes immediately with it. I guess my question that I'd throw back at you now is just starting to think about that individual in itself. At what point do you, in your own kind of process, in your own methodology, if you like, begin to start linking that individual into the units, if at all any?
Well, I think you're always trying to develop people's understanding of, and I quite like the simplicity now, what the FA have introduced, you know, in terms of the positioning, the movement, the timing, these qualities. I think that's a great sounding board to start off with, because when I'm coaching individuals, you just hit the nail on the head. And, you know, I sort of gave an example before. It's about the relationship with players, isn't it? So, you know, if you're coaching a midfield unit, what's the individual's role within that unit? How are they operating and working with the teammate and working together? A lot of that's based off of recognising cues and triggers, whether it's their movements, whether it's their timing, how they can position themselves to create space for themselves or their teammates, or what their structure is like when they're defending. It's mad because when I was thinking about this question before, it's interesting how the game and the perception of the game has just become more open-minded. I remember doing my UEFA B more than a decade ago, probably, what was it? Yeah, it was over a decade ago. And I remember being told that a unit had to have three or more players. You couldn't have a unit with no less than three players. That was what the instructor told us all. And it's funny because if you were to look at units now, you could argue that some have got two or potentially even one, maybe. So is it, you know, so it's interesting what we define as a unit, going back to your point before. And I think just simplifying it for everyone, you know, linking individuals to units, it's getting everyone to understand, well, what's the role of the individual within that unit? So if you've got your midfield unit or your defensive unit or your front unit, how are they working together? So that's where I'll tend to do a lot of coaching, just to understand relationships. A lot of it's about the function within that system, right? So their relationship with each other. And I don't think that can be too patterned. I think it's got to be as fluid as possible and really just recognizing information. So triggers, cues, timing, positioning, movement.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think like you said, you know, the game is moved in a way where units can probably be considered as one. But I think for the sake of clarity and sake of simplicity, I think it's also important for us to understand as coaches, you know, if we're not clear on what these terms are, if they can be quite confusing, we don't attempt to put some clarity in some, you know, not to say that it is necessarily a, you know, black and white all the time, because it's not. But if we don't attempt to try and put some black and white on it and make it a bit more structured and clear, it can be quite confusing for the players too. So I think, you know, I get where you're coming from in terms of the individual can also be a unit. But I think if we look at it to start with as they are individual players, well, the unit could subsequently be, as you've put it, for, you know, for sake of, you know, clarity and keeping things as simple as possible, looking at them as defence, midfield, forward, because that's, or forwards, that's traditionally how you probably would look at it. I think if we can simplify it from that standpoint and start to think, okay, well, is the information I'm about to give going to affect the unit of the player involved, or is it subsequently then going to have a knock-on effect to the unit ahead or behind? And I think if we start looking at it from that lens, then we can start thinking about easier maybe structures and ways in which we can start to link those units in. So I guess, you know, if we're talking about that linking piece, what are some effective strategies that you've found? Oh, God, you got your hand up. Go on.
No, I'd love you definitely keep finishing off your question, but I did have a question for you. You can finish off yours if you want.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, obviously, you know, what are some maybe useful strategies that you can start to maybe share and from your own insights and your own experiences around how coaches begin to go about doing that? Because obviously, like I said, for me, having, you know, now been on the delivery of UEFA B and obviously, you know, been through the journey myself and obviously just working with coaches generally over the last few years in a coach development, coach education capacity, it's really, really interesting to see how even, like I said, even got coaches on the B licence, having even completed the B licence, even coaches now see going on to the A licence, you still struggle with the concept of actually coaching on and around away from the ball. Subsequently, you know, have the knock-on effect, and you know, it's just another way of looking at it in that if you're struggling to coach on around away from the ball, are you ever doing anything much more than just coaching the individual? Does that make sense?
Yeah, because ultimately you're just ball watching, aren't you? You're just affecting the local area, you're not going global. So absolutely. The question I had for you was super snapshot question. For you, what's your definition of a unit? Is it how many, no, not definition, how many are in the unit? So is it two players or more?
I think, yeah, anything beyond...
What's the minimum number for you?
I think it has to, you have to look at it as two or more for me personally, because, well, just for the sake of separation, distinguishing and clarifying terms, right? The individual is the individual. An individual can't be more than the one, right? So therefore, in my opinion, anything part beyond one would be the unit. But I think the key thing to look at this is you could argue that there's two in a unit, you could argue it's three, four, or maybe even five or six, which is rare, but it's possible, right? But fundamentally, I think it's, for me, how I would look at it more simplicity again, is how many are in the line.
That's where I go back to that question. So it's more for developing people's curiosity. It's not to sidetrack the, because if you were to, you know me, you know what I'm like about semantics and the words and definitions. I love it. So unit can be anything, can't it? A unit can be a single measure. It could be an individual thing. A unit by definition is an individual thing or a single thing. It's not, so obviously in football, there's football language and then there's general language, right? But you hit the nail on the head. When I'm looking at units, I'm also looking at the lines, like where their relationship is. And it's tough, right? Because in football, you might say, well, he's more a part of this unit, maybe the defensive unit, or he might be stood here, positioned here, but we're going to class him more as with the forward units, the forward players.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And then that probably leads on to, again, it's important for everyone. What's your clarity in what you're doing without overthinking it? And how are you coaching these players? You know, you've got unit-specific training is fantastic. Are you putting players in the positions that it looks like on a game? So is there an identified game situation where there's a problem that we're trying to solve. So if we go back to, and it's a great resource, the 5 W's. So, you know, you asked that question before, how, and typically I'll try and look at 5 W's, who, what, when, where, why. And obviously you could add on to that how. So who, what, when, where, why. Within the 5 W's, it's important to get that detail and that clarity, because you're really asking yourself questions. So if you're looking at, for example, the process, you've got your identified behavior of what's currently happening, and then you want to go, okay, how can I improve this within the 5 W's? So, you know, where is it on the field? Who's involved? Who are the key players? You've got that specific unit. And then you can train that unit, whether it's defending around the box and you've got that specific back three unit or back four or back five against a front, whatever. So you're creating scenarios where it's attack v defense. And it can be in small units or big units. It could be, you know, we talk about units within units, right? So a unit within unit could be, as an example, going back to your point about simplicity, you've got a back four as a unit. That's your defensive unit. And then the unit within the units could be the two centre-backs. Agreed? So that could be a unit within the unit because they're a pairing, potentially. So then it's, all right, well, what's the relationship? So how do you develop those players' understanding? So, again, it's put, what I've tried to do over the years is putting them into scenarios where, first of all, got to identify what's the problem or what's the thing that we want to enhance. So I use the 5 W's as a reference point, you know, and then we'll create a scenario based on a moment in the game, whether it's attacking, defending, transitional moment, whatever it is. Create a game-like situation where all moments exist for sure, so it's game-like, but there's a heightened emphasis on, let's say if it's defending, how we're defending as a unit. So if the ball's going on one area, what's the roles and responsibilities? Who's travelling when? And then how we're probing.
Sorry, George, you're going very quiet, mate.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now or no?
Yeah.
I was just saying, you can design practices
where... Yeah, you're quiet again, mate.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, perfect.
So I was just saying you can design practices where it's game-like and you're developing the units within the unit. So like the unit of when you're defending, you know, traveling as the ball travels, making play predictable or dealing with pressure, wherever it might be, right? So it could be a number of different things you're training, but that's how I've typically done it. You know, if it's... We're defending as a unit. Okay, the ball's traveling here. Who's responsible for what? Who travels as that travels? If what questions are we posing to this defence? Okay, so if we've left this gap here, how can we solve that and that type of thing? So I think that's the beauty of developing the individual within the unit is you can do unit-specific training where you're working on your principles, but then the individual is a bit like what you said before. It's the roles. Like that individual's role within the unit. So the unit is the specific grouping. So as I gave an example before, let's say the back four, but then the individual within that unit could be the fullback or it could be the units within the unit. So the two centre backs, what's their role within that? So I think that's where the individuals to units is key, linking relationships, right?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one because I think, like you said, you know, there's so many different ways you could look at it, but I think it's really important that whatever coaches decide to do in terms of definitions of the units, whether it's based on the lines, whether it's based on those units within the units, as you're referring to, whether it's just simply stripping it right back and calling it defence, midfield and forwards. It's just, I think the key message for me is just making sure you've got absolute clarity on which lens you're looking through when you're actually approaching this idea of linking the individuals to units so that you know that's the methodology that you've gone with and that's the approach that you've gone with. Because otherwise, I think when it starts crossing over into more than one, then you can start, you know, potentially blurring the lines and putting grey areas or messages that don't need them. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's important, whatever language you settle on, that your players are clearly aware of that language and there's an alignment in terms of what the definitions and the perceptions of that language is. So I think that's probably really key within that. And I think, I guess, you know, linking it back into the theme of the conversation around it being linking the individuals to the units, you know, in context of the B license, one of the thing, you know, one of the key messages that always came from me was that you need to be also in positions to be able to effectively do it. So are you in a position that allows you to effectively see how the individual that you're working with is going to link into the unit directly around them, whether they're in that unit or whether it's the unit beyond? Because it might be, as you, you know, as you said, suggested earlier, if there is a one person, or if the structure of your team might be a 1-2-2 or 1-2-3-1-2, whatever it, information is, that one, is it going to be the unit in front or the unit behind that you're trying to link it in with, right? So I think it's really important to kind of address and understand what that perception and definition is so that you can do that effectively. So I guess, you know, building on from that, my question would be like, what might be some of the challenges that you think coaches will face when linking the unit to the individual, or linking the individual to the unit, and how can they maybe go about, I know it's not directly related to this, but I think it is somewhat appropriate to kind of discuss it, if you like, or relevant to discuss it, because now when we're now linking the individual to the unit, we've got to consider that actually sometimes that might be, mean linking the unit to the unit in front or behind as well too.
Yeah, could you repeat that just so I understand it clearer? What's the question for you?
Yeah, so just, you know, obviously in terms of some of the challenges that might come with for coaches when they're trying to actually effectively link that individual to the unit in front, or maybe the methodology or the process in which you suggest they potentially go through in assessing whether it's just the individual they're linking to the unit, or whether because the information they're giving to the individual within the unit is now, it turns into a situation where you're actually linking unit to unit through the individual, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is down to how we, well, first of all, you mentioned a great point earlier about coaching, right? How much are we doing purposely off the ball and off ball action versus on ball? And then going back to this individual thing with the unit, how are we designing moments for them? So if we're trying to link individuals to units and understanding, well, which unit are they referencing and what have you, an example could be, for example, you've got a directional game. All right, imagine this. So you've got a normal possession type game, attack B defense, but you've got neutral players on the inside. So I'm making these numbers up. Let's say it's a 4v4 or whatever the numbers are, right? It could be position specific. So it could be more numbers, let's say, it could be whatever it is, but you've got based on your shape and your structure. But then you've got neutral players that would occupy positions that would normally be in a game. But what you could do is you could give, let's say you've got three neutral players. One of those neutral players could be a defensive neutral. Now, bear with me on this one, because this is where my head's going. So, and we tried this the other day and it worked really well. So often when people talk about neutral players, the thing with neutrals is they don't do what? They don't defend, right, Yaz? They never defend. They always get the ball in the attack.
Typically. And I've often questioned coaches on this, whether, you know, of one, personally, I don't really like using neutral players or what some people refer to as magic men, because it's just not real, right? But the question I always ask is, why do we never put that player out of position?
Yeah, so this is it, right? So, and I don't think there's a... I've used them for different reasons, depending on loading, depending on if there's players going back from injury, if there's players who need to be deloaded in a certain way or loaded up in a certain way or whatever. But anyway, so with this one defense...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Neutral, he can defend. So the rule is, we're attacking, we're trying to build up. When both teams have the ball, he can get it, and he's the number six. So he plays as the number six for both teams. So in that moment, he's dropping into those positions, receive off the back players in front of the goalie, right? And he can technically play with the other two wide players, who are the also the neutrals, right? He can only receive the ball on a restart, which is from the goalkeeper or from the opposite server, let's say, target player at the opposite end. But he cannot receive the ball on transition. So let's say he plays into you and then, you know, we attack, we lose it. He cannot get that ball on transition. He can, this number six can only receive the ball on a restart, either from the goalkeeper or from the opposite target player. So now what that forces is that number six now to be in moments when there's attacking and it's build up. So now he's joining the defensive unit, right? And he's a part of that unit, even though he's a midfielder. And then there's moments when he's joining the attacking unit in supporting the attack, but there's moments where he's connected with the unit in moments of attacking, defending. So he's joining up from midfield to defence. So on transition, he cannot receive the ball. So that forces the ball to have to go into another, the whoever's in possession, the other team, and they might play into that neutral player. Because of that, he's not on their team. So now he can go press that neutral player and defend the other neutral player. So then the neutral players are getting pressed from behind or wherever the ball is. And he's also defending off the ball. So what we've done then is we've designed a situation where for this particular player, he's got an individual role, which might be what's your timing in your movement to receive the ball, right? And then from when we've lost the ball, how are you protecting us? So an example could be, as I said, it could be goalkeeper and a back three, let's say, with a neutral player as a six versus a front two. You've got two wide over neutral players to represent like an 8-10 or a 7-11. And then you've got a front two versus a back three and then an opposite target player. So that's what's in my head now as I'm picturing it in my mind based on the structure. But that there's a simple rule there that this number six, and even to help it, the six could almost be locked into that middle third. So if you just split the field into thirds, you know, horizontally, locked in to that third, potentially, and then you might create rules where he's unlocked depending on certain moments. What that now does is that links individuals to units because you've got a player that can receive the ball and get on the ball, but part of his individual role is recognising how do I stop those passes going into certain teams, but then certain players. But then when we've got it in other instances, I'm working for both teams. So I'm getting more repetitions or more meaningful repetitions. Yeah? So it's just a clever way of doing it. That's something that we did recently, a variation of it. It's fresh in my mind. So again, it's how are you linking individuals to units? That might be a more complex way of doing it. A simple way is just, again, having individuals within a structure and just, again, helping them to understand that when we've got the ball in this area of the pitch, this is what your roles and responsibilities are. When we've got the ball in this area of the pitch, this is what your roles and responsibilities are.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a few different ideas that have popped up there. But I think the fundamental thing that's coming through all of that is it's just being clear, like you said, about the roles and responsibilities of the individual, regardless of what the phase is or what the unit is. It's just, what are you doing in this moment of the game? And I think that's the key. And I think one of the bigger challenges coaches may face with young players in particular is just getting them to understand and reshape their thinking around you've got roles and responsibilities both in and out of position, regardless of what position on the pitch you play. You know, I think we've all been there where you get certain players, you think because they're defenders or in the defensive part of the pitch that they are just defenders, so they only operate when they're out of possession. When in fact it's, well, what happens when you win the ball? You don't just kick it away, but even in that moment, you're actually in possession now. And there's that to be a transition to get to that point. So I think it's just a bit of an education piece around, you know, in helping players understand they're involved in every capacity of the game, both in, out of possession, as well as the transitions. But I'm conscious, you know, we've got a few different people in the room, some new faces in there as well, so it's great to see them. whether anyone else has got any ideas. And I'm conscious, you know, Tony, you put in there that, you know, for yourself, a unit is just, you know, it can be more than one line of players. Just interested to get your perceptions on that and whether that's changed over the years for you in any way, shape or form, whether that's always been your thought process. But Gerard, even on that, while waiting for anyone, if anyone wants to get involved, we know where, of course, is in this an FACPD, but just interested in, you know, what the perception of this question might be in the school of thought, both the world of Morocco and the world of obviously the US, you know, with your experiences across both continents.
Yeah, I would say that most people would probably, in Morocco, they used to talk about it of sectoral and intersectoral, which would be units and units within units. And that would, their understanding was very much, you know, exactly this, like team, unit, unit within unit, individual. So it would go down this sort of linear fashion, I would say. And they would do a lot of position-specific training, like a hell of a lot of position-specific training. So you'd have your team concepts, but then you'd see a lot of practices that were very small numbered, and that would be your units type work, functional practices and so forth. So, you know, that would be very common. USA, I don't think we talk too much about individuals to units. I mean, I'm teaching on the B license now over here. It's something that we probably, we talk about, but we don't label it as such. So one of the tasks that coaches have to do, comes back to that five W's, is they have to identify a game situation. And that's really big, because we talk about coaching's about changing behavior. So with the five W's, we look at the current behavior of, you know, what we see. So who are the key players involved in that game situation, that scenario? You know, what happened? Where was it on the field? When did it happen? So what particular moment or phase of play did it occur in? And we try to describe how the opponent's behaving during that situation. And why did it happen? And the why links into your sort of unit, if you like, because we'll describe factors that are associated with, you know, individual behaviors or the unit behavior. And then we'll look at, okay, so what are the five W's for how we want to change behavior? So we have what we call current behavior and then desired behavior. So then we would go through each of those five W's again, but we'd identify the key players in the situation. But we just, the what is now, instead of it being before, which was the current, maybe unsuccessful behavior, it's now, okay, what would success look like in this moment? And then we go from each step. And basically what you end up having is a picture of a scenario with specific players on the field in that sort of area of the field, so you can imagine. And then we talk about, okay, well, if this individual gets the ball now, and he plays this, what else could happen? Who else could affect that pass? And then we go through these what-if scenarios. So we don't necessarily label it as individuals to units, but we do briefly talk about it, because they have to do it in their session design, which is really not too dissimilar from the UEFA B, where you've got your 7, 9, 11, you've got all your numbers, you've got your team organization and shape. And then it's how you're designing practices to elicit behavior, and that's what we really go after, to be honest. But a lot, I would say it's a lot more team orientated, team tactics and team structures versus individual.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because I mean, I'm just thinking out loud now, and thinking to myself, even in the continent on the B license here, and even just through my own experiences, both as a coach and in general, as well as when I did my B license, I think one of the things that always stuck with me going through the process was, right, you're going to coach the individual, but can you start to think about, again, I referred to it earlier, that influence, the impact of what you're coaching this individual is going to have on the wider team context. Starting again with that piece of, you know, of, how does it affect the players around him, and how does it affect the players beyond him, and more specifically away from the ball, right? And it's just something that, I guess, like I said, you know, I think we need to just get better at as coaches generally. But it's to start off with, is just, are you picking up positions which allow you to see those connections, which allow you to see the impact and the potential of that influence and that impact based on what you're looking to go after? If you look, you know, depending on what you're coaching, whatever your theme is, well, what's the expectation from different players within that process as a whole? And then you can start to think about, okay, well, before you start linking individuals to the unit, I mean, the most common example I could start to think of, and if you'd link it back to the principles of play, right? I think about this conversation I had with a coach just recently. He said that, you know, before a couple of the interactions that we've had, he used to look at certain players and say that these players were maybe hogging the ball a little bit too much. But actually, now we started to look at the wider context and starting to think about the units and the wider team context. He's changed his perception on the fact that this ball player is probably not a ball hog because he's not holding on to it because he's not trying to do the right thing, which is potentially align itself to the principles of play, and he's still trying to penetrate. But what he realized is that he was spending too much time looking at the individual and not the players around him, and therefore was left in a situation when he started to take a bit of a wider lens on it, he realized, well, the reason why he's holding on to it for as long as he is because the players around him are not actually moving to support what he's trying to achieve in that moment. And it's just kind of, you know, a very brief example of how the unit and the players around the person who you're potentially looking to coach are actually having a direct impact on their ability to perform the objective, you know, perform and meet the objective of the game, which is obviously to penetrate, or, you know, if they're out of possession, stop the penetration from taking place. So I guess, you know, those are probably some of the key messages that I would probably lend and leave on this particular one. Is there anything of note that you think, right, if there's one thing that coaches can start doing from this point onwards, and again, not just in preparing for the B license and what that journey might expect of them, but just generally going forward?
I think one thing that will really help a lot of coaches is just having a very clear vision of what the game looks like in terms of what does their game look like. So when you're analysing a game, taking a slice of the game. So if you look at that moment, and you almost like a piece of pie, like if you know, when you're cutting into a cake or whatever, if you were to cut that slice off and you were to, whether it was to be a circle, whether it was to be a square rectangle, look at how many players are involved in that area and look at the units within that area or the individuals and start to design practices around that situation. I think that's going to help your coaching massively, because often a lot of coaches, when they start out coaching, they're just designing activities for the sake of designing activities, which look great on paper, but they're almost in separation from the game. Whereas if you start with the game in mind and the end in mind, you're going to be in a better place for creating stuff. And then if we're linking it back to, again, anything within the individuals to units, a huge thing that often gets overlooked, and, you know, irrespective of where you are in your journey, you could be listening here and you're a A-license coach, pro-license coach, or a C-license coach. It doesn't matter. Organisation is absolutely paramount. And that is something that I know US Soccer have done really well, and it's something that I've stolen and adapted to my own framework. They have this thing called the five elements. And number one is, five elements of a training session. Number one is organisation. And this links to everything, UEFA B for the FA, everything. Organisation. And then from there, it goes on. So you've got organisation, you've got repetition, you've got coaching, you've got so on. Now, you can't get to coaching. Often a lot of coaches will start coaching individuals, units, a team. But if it's not organised, if it doesn't look like the game, the coaching is wasted. So when you think back to organisation, another little tip you just said, any advice, I would say, think about those numbers that you're trying to create. What does the organisation look like? So in terms of, you know, the defensive unit, the midfield unit, etc., what does it look like? If it's a attack v defence and it's a 9v7 game, What does it look like? How many defenders have you got, attackers and so forth? What's the positional roles of the players? And when you're designing them, you've got to also think about what factors. I know the FA are big on this around the four-corner model with the technical, tactical, psych, physical, social. Well, it's not a bad starting place, because if you're thinking of a unit of, you know, we didn't talk about this before, but let's say your unit is your number one, so your goalkeeper, your two, your five, and your six, let's say, right? So you've got your right back, your centre back, your other centre back. Let's say it's a functional practice, you've cut off the left back or whatever. Well, what's the detail that you're looking for? Depending on the moment. So let's say you're working on a defending moment in wide areas, and it's the goalkeeper's relationship and the right back and your two centre backs. Well, is it the cover and the balance, the positioning? So from a technical, tactical point of view, the emergency defending? Is it the body shape, the communication of the goalkeeper to the five and six? Is it the five and six's positioning in balance in terms of the body shape? Or is it, you know, out of balance in terms of when we're disorganized and what their recovery runs look like to goal? You know, what's their speed and angles of approach? So you've, one thing that this will allow you to do is when you're thinking about these details, you're able to get a laser focus on what is it you're actually going to coach today. But if it's not organized, you can't get those details. So I would say just looking at the game, taking a slice of the game, and then asking the question of what does success look like in this moment? What do we really want? What does success look like? What does great look like? What could go wrong? So you're going through all the what ifs, and then effectively you've got a really cool practice. And it's down to the coach to, you know, going full circle back to one of the things you said at the start of going, well, how do I spend more time off the ball? So where do I need to stand in order to see and affect the game? What do I need to say off the ball to influence behaviour? So how am I coaching the players off the ball? What triggers and cues do they need to recognise in order to influence them? So these are all the things that you can do. And the individual piece is key, because you're just helping that individual player understand their role within the function of that unit. So whether that's the goalkeeper and the key coaching points for them, or whether it's the fullback or whoever it is in that instance.
No, I think it's a great point. I think, you know, just it's just that piece, just how forensic you can get into the finer details of each individual, right? And understanding that if you know, even like you said, using the four corner model, we're just looking at that and just saying, right, well, what are the I don't want to call it competencies, but what are the characteristics almost that you want to kind of see observed in different positions in different areas of the pitch, based on, you know, the methodology of what the team are trying to do, based on the roles and responsibilities in each given moment, both going forward and coming back, in and out of possession and through transition. Then you can start to develop an understanding of, right, where your lens goes when you start to observe what you're looking for from the individual. And then when you start to see that, then you can start moving in, you know, what was drummed in back in the day was, are you coaching in a logical order? Well, let's start with where we need to focus the lens on to get this practice going. And if you've got the practice going, then you can start to see those things. And then I think something that came into conversation recently for me was, you start to think whether you're coaching concepts or whether you're coaching the game. And I think the difference is you can coach concepts can be coached in situations which aren't necessarily real. But the game needs to be real. And, you know, your practices need to be linked to the real game and fundamentally directional in order to start bringing these concepts to life, if you like. So nice, some good bits in there, Jared. I'm conscious, obviously, you know, it is a FA CPD opportunity for people to kind of get some CPD out. So maybe you want to share some insight on how they can do that.
Yeah, I've just shared a link in the comments section. So if anyone's eligible for FA CPD, if you've got a fan number, you complete this short self-reflection form where you look at what your key takeaways are. Make sure you do put your name and your fan number correctly, And then that'll make sure that you're eligible for up to an hour CPD through Middlesex FA. If you're not looking for adding this onto your fan profile, but you still want to complete your self-reflection, you're more than welcome to as well.
100%. Gerard, any lasting messages before we sign off?
No, I just think stay curious. You know, stay curious. Like, I'm looking at, you know, even Tony's message before, and everyone's, I've had a couple of direct messages. It's really cool. You know, this is what I love about the game. And I think you can be so open, and obviously don't overcomplicate it for sure. But just think about what does the game look like? You know, I wish when I started out coaching, I used to design these really cool practices, and I used to love it. And then as I got further and further on my journey, I used to really look at the game as my starting point and then design activities based off that. And I wish I'd have just started there, to be honest. And maybe I wasn't ready, I don't know. But I think if you actually take the game and you look at what the game presents you, there's enough information there to create some really cool environments. So if we're talking about linking individuals to units, how are we supporting individuals within those units based on what the game demands? So, you know, it's a great thing to do. So, you know, I think it's great that we got people listening in, and we want to keep growing this community, and, you know, everyone stay curious and learn off each other.
100%. I think I couldn't have said it any better myself. And I think it's really important that we're not just taking the information, but it's just, you know, the challenge is what are you going to do with the information that you're gathering, whether it's from here, whether it's from elsewhere. And I think it's just constantly going away and looking to apply some of these ideas. And I think one thing that, you know, that's always worked well for me, and I remember having a conversation with someone about 3-4 years ago, and it kind of it's just ever stuck ever since. Every session you go into, just try something new. Just try something different. It doesn't have to be revolutionary. It doesn't have to be monumental, but just try just a small shift on what you're currently doing, just to see, you know, how sometimes the minor changes can give you monumental returns, right? And I think it's just keep trying something new, keep listening, keep engaging with us. If you've got any ideas and any thoughts around what you want to hear discussed in future conversations, let us know. But it's always good to connect. But like I said, Gerard, just to echo what you said as well, we've got to keep growing the community. It's good to see the people in the room, and I think continuously joining us and being curious about coaching is where we need to be. Gerard, until next week, man, I think that's it from me.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.